Welcome into a special post-Masters edition. I think we got three Masters across the board here. Bob Stevens, formerly of ESPN. Curry Kirkpatrick, of course, formerly of Sports Illustrated. Rich Basirico, Hall of Fame basketball coach, bon vivant, and Hilton Head legend. We'll certainly can give him all of that. Coming off the Masters.
Bon vivant. Rich is the bon vivant. Okay.
He is indeed. What do we say about the Masters? Can anybody throw anybody under the bus that has anything to do with Scottie Scheffler? I don't think so.
He's terrific. He's outstanding. It's amazing. I can't imagine he's winning, what, three tournaments in a row? Is that correct?
Three out of four.
Okay. And the other one, he came in second.
Go ahead.
It seems to me there was an inevitability to this guy at Augusta. I mean, it was like he was going to win going in. He's the number one player in the world. He's been that for a couple of years. He's won like nine tournaments. This is early in his fifth year on the tour. He's won five. Now, you know, he hasn't been a big factor in a lot of the majors except the Masters. So I don't know if we can, you know, he's not Bobby Jones. He's not Nicholas Tiger yet. But the inevitability, somebody had a great line. He said he UConn'd the Masters. And that was kind of like that. You know, everybody knew UConn was going to win the NCAA. They dominated everybody. You know, after the bad weather on Friday, everybody thought, okay, here we go. We're going to have nice weather for the weekend. And, you know, the Masters has always been so exciting with the drama. But, you know, nothing happened on Saturday or Sunday. Now, everybody got kind of tight. You know, it was like four of them were tied with around the turn going into the last nine. And then all of a sudden, everybody started to make mistakes. And this guy, I call him Shuffles because he just shuffles Scheffler. He just shuffles along. He just shuffles along, making these great second shots, making putts, you know, and everybody else is going south. That's the way it happens.
At 4:22 on Sunday afternoon, there was a five-way tie for the lead, actually. An hour and 7 minutes later, Scheffler was up by four.
Wow. Yeah. The Morikawa hit in the water. Oberg, the young Swede, the great young Swede, who's going to be a really terrific player, he hit it in the water. Homa hit it in that trash behind the 12th. And he hit it, you know, he tried to chip out. He hit a chip like you and I would hit. I mean, he hit it like four. I mean, it was a disaster. And then he, you know, he got on, he two putts, he makes five there. You know, Bob, and, you know, weren't we talking about this last week that his excellence, his consistency is intimidating in itself. You know, he's not like Tiger and Jack and just their presence with just his just being on the leaderboard. These guys see there's Scheffler. There he is. He's never going away.
Right.
I think, you know, I said to a friend, I mean, if he shoots 69 on Sunday, it's over. These guys aren't just, they're going to fall away, which they did.
Yeah, in the end, that certainly happened. Well, one of the things that I love about golf as a sport, playing it and watching it, is that we have all hit a great shot like these guys hit. We've all done it. We've all missed putts that they miss. You know, we have that interaction that you don't get in any other sport. We've never hit a home run at Yankee Stadium. We've never done any of the rest of this.
Right.
Or scored a touchdown in front of 80,000 people. But we have all hit the shots that golfers hit. But his ability to hit the shot in the moment, I mean, that shot at nine, which basically put it all away when he hit it to, a foot. We have all hit that shot, just not on Sunday at the Masters with a five-way tie. I mean, it's just, that's what he has done that I think really separates him from everybody. In the moment, he will hit the shot.
That's why bad golfers, and there are tons of them that love this sport so much, that's why they keep coming back the next, there I go, speaking of coming back.
Yeah.
am I in it back?
Yeah, you're back. We can hear you. We'll see you here in a minute. But you're right. That's what keeps them coming back and keeps them in the moment. Scottie Scheffler has made, while you're getting set, I'll throw this out there. Scottie Scheffler has made $12.7 million in his last 5 weeks. So if his caddy, Ted Scott, gets his 10%, Ted Scott has made $1.7 million or $1.2 million in the last 5 weeks. That puts him about sixth on the money list over the last 5 weeks. just Scheffler's caddy.
The thing that we can throw him under the bus for is he's not exactly exciting. He's not exactly charismatic. In fact, am I echoing here?
No, you're good.
Okay. In fact, he's flat out boring. I mean, let's just face it. He's just really boring. And that's his personality. I mean, you know, he's never excited. He makes these great second shots and the crowds are going crazy and he's looking down at the ground. He doesn't even wave anymore. I mean, he just sort of plods and he shuffles up the green, makes his birdie and goes on. I mean, he said afterward, you know, he said golf is a stunningly unsatisfactory career. I mean, I wonder if he's even having fun. He doesn't, you know, the most exciting thing about him in the tournament was, you know, he said his wife Meredith was about to have a baby. And if she went into labor, he's leaving. He's going. It doesn't matter where he was or what score was.
But here's the thing about him last night. So he leaves the Masters and going home to Dallas. And I saw something in the New York Post. He stopped at a tavern before he got home. So and then from there, and then he's coming back to the Heritage on Hilton Head today, right?
So Is he playing Heritage?
There was no reason we would expect him to be here. But
is he really playing the Heritage?
Yes.
He has a tee time in the Pro-Am and a time in the media center on Wednesday. So we'll see.
Kurt, you know, he's so focused. Like I didn't see any reaction. Like you say, he never smiled until the very end when he won.
Yeah.
But I think that's why he's so good, because he's so focused, you know, and nothing rattles him whatsoever. These other golfers, as you mentioned, Bob, about losing, you know, in an hour and what it was, hour and 10 minutes.
Yeah, it was an hour and 10 minutes.
Strokes. They just lost it. You know, they had a bad shot and they didn't, their composure went away. Where he keeps his composure the whole time. That's why he's such a great golfer.
Doesn't do too many dumb things, that's for sure. Hey, I got a moment of positivity, though, for you two guys. The three of us are all each as close to being in the top three in the world as number three Xander Schauffele is to being number one in the world rankings. We are as close to Schauffele. We're closer to Schauffele than Schauffele is to Scheffler.
Okay, I'm gonna try to figure that out. Can I bring something? I stayed tuned at the end. You know, a lot of people I think left the Masters to watch something else. I stayed tuned to watch the end because I wanted to see how CBS said goodbye to Vern Lundquist, who, you know, was in his 40th Masters, a legendary Vern Lundquist. If I could just tell a personal story, when I in the late 80s, CBS called me to. They wanted to know what a writer sounded like doing some basketball, college basketball, which I was doing a lot of college basketball. So they brought me in and to do a practice game, actually to do color on a college basketball game. And they set me up at the Kentucky Louisville game. Which is a huge game. It was in December, and it was a practice game. They called it for me, which was really audition tape. And Vern Lundquist was the guy they set me up with. Now, I'm sure he didn't love the idea of working with some writer on his off weekend to come in and do a game with me. But the guy couldn't have been nicer. He's just the nicest guy in the history of the world. Everybody says that about him. And I found out about that firsthand. We did the game and I guess I did okay because I did the tournament for several years after that, the first round of the tournament. But, you know, that's when I got to know Vern and I became friends with him and he always kept in touch with me. And he's that kind of guy. I mean, it was just wonderful. It was a great moment when Tiger finished on six, when his finishing round on Sunday on 16. And Vern was out there, you know, before he went on the air and he was sitting behind a tree. Did you see this? Yeah. Watching Tiger play out on 16 and Tiger came over and greeted him and said hello and probably said goodbye and shook his hand. The problem was Vern was behind the tree and somebody got a video of this and Tiger is shaking hands. It looks like he's shaking hands with the tree because Vern was behind the tree, but it was quite a moment. And then, you know, I stayed around. I wanted to see what Jim Nantz said. And mm-hmm. and when the final group finished and Nantz had this great tribute and you can hear Vern, you can't see him. You can just hear him. And Nantz says, Vern, you know, he kind of quoted some guy. He said, but your voice has been a beautiful instrument, a wonderful soundtrack for all of our lives. Wow. And you could hear a little stunned silence in the background. And Vern said, it's been a pleasure. It's been an honor. And I hope CBS had the mops ready in the trucks, because I'll bet there were some tears flowing in the CBS trucks.
That's what we would all hope people would say about you in the end. And he certainly got that. And yeah, he's just a terrific guy. Two quick things I want to throw in, and then we'll finish with the Masters and we'll go on. You just mentioned Tiger. This is the first we've mentioned of Tiger in the entire podcast. We haven't talked about a shot he's hit yet, which is probably a good thing, huh?
Yeah, he ended with plus 16, right? Was how he finished? Last place?
We used to call it DFL. Last.
And Death last. Well, he was last among all those that made the cut, but he could say he wasn't last in the term. But, you know, the guy shot 72 on Friday in those terrible winds. There's only one guy under 70 in the second round, and Tiger was at 72. And then, of course, on the weekend, he collapses. His body can't do it. There should be tournaments of 36. People kid about Liv being 54 holes. They should give Tiger a tournament. They should make Tiger play tournaments just 36 holes. You play, you try to play, and he can contend in those. But, you know, I just think his body breaks down, Rich. His physical, he can't.
Without a doubt, he can't walk all those for 4 days. I think it does take a toll on his body. But how about a lot of the veterans who just really didn't do very well? You know, Phil Mickelson was a plus 8, and John Rahm was plus 9. A lot of the guys
Spieth missed the cut. Thomas missed the cut. Right. All these tons of guys, all these contemporaries of Scheffler, of Shuffles. And Shuffles is going along, shuffling along, and these guys can't even make the cut. Correct. You know, I don't know what that says about, you know, our concurrent great players. I mean, I don't know. Where's Rory McIlroy? Yeah. I mean, he hasn't won a major in 10 years. I mean, just think about that. And he's, you know, he's trying to, what's that, the 10th time he's tried to make the fourth, the Grand Slam. He's won all three of them before, and he can't win the Masters.
In fact, the rotation of tournaments is around to where he's finally getting to play at Valhalla coming up here at the PGA, a place he did win before. So they're coming around to where they're places.
Yeah.
It's been so long that he's getting to play them again. And I wish him luck. I hope he does well. One last thing. I just wanted to kind of plant the seed in folks' heads. One of the reasons the Masters is special are the roars, the noises that get made, you know, especially on the weekend when a guy makes a big putt, everybody knows who it was and where they were. You know why? Because they don't let cell phones on the course. People do not have their hands on their cell phones taking a picture of something. Yeah. They got nothing to do but watch what's going on and roar when something good happens. It's just something to ponder.
That's the way it should be. I love it. Yeah.
I was about to start roaring at home when I looked at Jason Day's new outfits. How do you like that? He played with Tiger the first 2 days, and you know, he has this new line, and he had this ridiculous sweater vest that looked like Bolodrome meets NASCAR. It had this big, huge sign on it. Malbon is the new line, which is created by this couple in LA. They call them the culture vultures. These guys that created this line. And how about his pants? How about his parachute pants that he had on? And in the wind, they looked like they were going to blow him away. And, you know, I just thought about the parachute pant. There he look at this thing. And the parachute pants look like, of course, MJ Hammer. You can't touch this. And I was thinking, you know, I was thinking back in the day, I'll bet Tiger knew MJ Hammer. He could say to Jason Day, hey, Jason, I knew MJ Hammer and you're no hammer. But those parachute pants and you know, the Masters told in the middle of his round on Friday, Masters asked Jason Day, could you please remove the vest? And he complied quite quickly. He was saying, and then he said afterward, hey, it's their tournament. You know, I'll do what they want. Meaning, I desperately want to come back here.
That's for sure. All right, you're talking about hammers. Let's talk about other weapons and a guy who passed this past week, O.J. Simpson. Curry's got some great stories about O.J. We'll tell when we come back under the bus. Welcome back to Under the Bus. Rich Basirico, Curry Kirkpatrick, and Bob Stevens joining you as we talk about all things this past week. The Masters is out of the way until next year. Let's go on to a topic that O.J. Simpson would love to have been at the Masters any year, probably. He was a golf nut. He passed away at 76 this past year. Everybody probably has an OJ story, but Curry, you've got a bunch of them that probably involve being up close and personal with the juice. Fire away.
Well, when OJ died, I think I texted you guys an old picture of me and OJ, and that was 50 years ago.
Wow.
And I was covering something called the Superstars. I don't know if you remember that, but IMG invented this competition of 10 events they had in Florida, and they invited all these stars of every sport. I mean, Reggie Jackson.
You had to cover that?
Yeah, it was great. Oh. It was great fun because, you know, they had to swim. They had to play golf. Of course, in their specialty, Stan Smith was there that year. They had it for about 5 years. But this particular year is when we did the story, and OJ was there, and Reggie Jackson, and Franco Harris, the great skier, Carl Schmitz, Pete Rose was there, OJ and OJ and Stan Smith. And I would hang around, you know, talking to these guys and before the competition started, and they all wanted to practice their tennis. That was one of the events. So I would be their tennis guy. I played some games against all these guys, and I was so happy because I was a pretty good tennis player back then. And none of these guys could play tennis except Schranz. And I lost him, but I beat OJ 4-2, 4-2, 4 games to 2. You know, we play these quick things. So, and that's when I got to know him. And you know, as everybody said, he was such a terrific people person. You know, he became you guys. He became, oh my goodness, there I am. You know, he was this horrible thing that happened. You know, just destroyed his reputation. He was one of the great, you know, sports figures to become a national cultural figure. He did all those ads for, you know, running through the airport for Hertz rental car and running and, you know, he was in the living rooms of every American for years and years who knew O.J. Simpson just as a celebrity. And, then this thing happened. I don't know if you guys ever did. You, Rich, you sort of ran into everybody in your time. Did you ever know OJ?
No, I never ran into him. But you know, I was a fan of his when he played at USC and was a Heisman winner. And then, of course, I'm a Giant fan, but he played at Buffalo, and I still followed his career because he was such a great runner.
Everybody loved OJ. The juice, like Bob said. Bob, did you cover him some stuff? Do some stuff.
I was involved in the day that is that the 30 for 30 at ESPN did on that day when the Knicks and Rockets were playing and Arnold Palmer was having his last round at Oakmont and OJ, you know, the chase. I was at ESPN then, and it was bizarre. I did not know OJ, but I was just thinking, Curry, could OJ have been, had all of this other stuff not happened, Could he have been Schwarzenegger, the kind of guy that could have gone political if he wanted to and could have pretty much done anything because everybody liked him?
Yeah, I think he could have gone into politics, and he knew a lot of politicians. He, you know, he knew all the network people who would set him up with stuff if he wanted to do that. I just want to say that the superstars that I was telling about was in 1974. That's 50 years ago. In 1994, May of 94, on that day, that's 20 years later, and it's 30 years ago, this May, I was working for Newsweek magazine then, and I was in a hotel room in New York, ready to cover the playoffs. It was the playoffs between Houston and the Knicks, Olajuwon against Ewing, and I was all set to do the series. I was in New York, and Newsweek called me on the phone. They said, I was talking to an editor. He said, "Curry, is your television on?" And I said, "No." He said, "Turn on the television." On the television was the white Bronco rolling through, rolling along the highways of Los Angeles and into every American's living room. Yeah. OJ on the run. I mean, you know, you guys remember what a spectacular, I mean, this thing, it just enveloped every news story in America. It was just, you know, for that whole day, OJ, was he going to kill himself? What was going to happen? Was he on the run? And he ended up, you know, rolling into his driveway and giving himself up. But and then came the trial, which captivated America again. And but anyway, that day, you know, they said the story's over. You're not doing the playoffs. We want you to stay there. The Newsweek would send me files and phone numbers. We did about 7 stories on that on the OJ chase. He was on the cover. You just put the cover up there. And the story I did was called Tales of Celebrity Babylon. And I went through a lot of all the celebrity scandals over the years that involved, you know, from Snoop Dogg to Klaus von Bülow to Johnny Stompanato being stabbed by Lana Turner's daughter. I mean, I went back and did all this stuff. And a couple of numbers gave me were lawyers, lawyers' numbers to call up and see what they had to say about what we're going to, about this chase and what was going to happen to OJ. And two of them were F. Lee Bailey and Alan Dershowitz. And I remember calling up, and F. Lee Bailey, there's no answer, of course. I called the Dershowitz number that I was given by Newsweek, and there was a recording on there. And it was Alan Dershowitz saying, "I know why you're calling." And he went 5 minutes on what was going to happen to OJ and what his defense would be, and et cetera, et cetera. You know, he was such a publicity hound, Dershowitz, that he had recorded his answer because he didn't have time to talk to every media person. He says, "I know why you're calling." It was unbelievable. And of course, the two of them ended up.
Go ahead.
On the dream team that defended OJ.
In your illustrious journalism career, is that the only time you ever got quotes from an answering machine?
You know, yeah, exactly. It was terrific.
Because it was quotable, right? I mean, it was stuff you could use.
So then the trial came, and I was in L.A. for some other story. So I drove down to the courthouse because I wanted, you know, and the courthouse was, crowds around and different people. Everybody was selling shirts and pins, and I got all this paraphernalia from the trial. And and I still have it. And then when a few years later, after, you know, he was acquitted, you know, if the gloves don't fit, you must acquit. I remember, again, I was in L.A. and I wanted to do my own like little sick-a-thon trip and see all the, and I went to Mezzaluna, the restaurant where Ron, what was his name? Ron Goldman worked the restaurant. I went by OJ's Brentwood mansion. I went by the nursery school where his kids were that day. And then, of course, I drove and went to the condo where Nicole and Ron were murdered. I mean, I did. I just want to see all this. Of course, the condo now is down. It's all down, and it's been built up. Other stuff is there. But I went on my OJ trip, and sure enough, I went out the last time, it was late in the day, and I went to OJ's mansion again to see it. And I just wanted to see and there were a bunch of crowds out behind me. It was behind these big fences, this big fence. And there were all these Asian, like, tourists. And they were holding up OJ's sign. This is after he's been to trial and he's quit. They're hanging out. And sure, and I just hung around to watch this for about half an hour. And sure enough, the gates opened, and here came this convertible. OJ was driving his convertible all by himself. And he slowly drove through the crowds. He was posing. He was signing autographs. And it was unbelievable. And all I could think of myself, that was in the same period of time that Andrew Cunanan went on his murder spree and killed the designer Versace in Miami. And all I could think of was, there's no security around OJ at all. Somebody could just come up and kill him. And if you wanted attention, if you wanted to be a cultural hero, you would kill OJ and you'd be a hero to half of America, all the women in America. And I wondered why Cunanan didn't go after OJ rather than Versace. That's all I could think of.
You should do a tour, Curry.
There was no security around him, you guys. He was just driving his OJ in his convertible. Wow. I mean,
Is Cato staying with you this week?
He was Cato. Actually, my daughter, who lives in L.A., sees Cato all the time in her neighborhood, talks to him. And yeah. So my OJ connection, that's about it. But,
that's terrific.
But it's a timeline of our lives. You know, such a cultural figure is now dead. And of course, OJ lived this sad and hopeless life after that, went to prison, for that incident, with his paraphernalia. But, when he died, it's kind of a timeline of your life. You just, all these years, 50 of them for me.
30 years. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know of anybody who did not watch his Bronco on TV? Everybody that I've ever talked to, everybody watched that.
How about, do you know anybody who didn't watch the trial?
Right. Everybody did.
Well, yeah, it was wall to wall.
Yeah.
Amazing stuff. All right. We still got a little bit of time. We still got some things to talk about. The NBA playoffs begin Tuesday night. Everybody, I can see guys are on the edge of their seat for this. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the new basketball coach at Kentucky. And we'll finish things up when we come back and throw some people under the bus. All right, welcome back to Under the Bus. This is always kind of the odds and ends segment as we rejoin with Rich Pasirico, Curry Kirkpatrick. I'm Bob Stevens. The NBA play-in games. And I had to go look this up. Look, they've been doing it for a couple of years, but I haven't paid much attention just to figure out who plays who and what happens next. And what do you guys think of this? Is this crazy?
It's confusing. I mean, when you have 7 plays 8, 9 plays 10, in the 7-8 game, the loser still is alive.
Right.
In the 9-10 game, the loser's gone. And then the winner of the 9-10 plays the loser of the 7-8, and the winner of that is in the playoffs. So it is very confusing. It is confusing.
Well, the way it's set up, you can game the system. You know, everybody's talking now about the Lakers. If the Lakers win, they finish eighth, and they finish seventh, maybe, and they play Denver. They have to play the Denver Nuggets, who've beat them eight straight. So the Lakers would lose. They would avoid playing the Nuggets. And people are talking about, well, maybe the Lakers will lose deliberately. So now they're on Oklahoma City's side of the draw, right? But if they lose, then they're going to have to play what the winner of Sacramento, Golden State, right?
Yeah.
Both of which they haven't done well this year against. So now they're on the cutting edge of having to do that. So who knows what they're going to do? But it's set up the game, the system, the whole deal. You shouldn't be the NBA should not have any setup where if you lose, you're better off than if you win.
Sure.
Well, that happened to the Knicks. The Knicks won on Sunday, and they're the 2 seed, and now they're more than likely going to have to play Philly.
Beats Miami, yeah.
That's right. Or they would have, if they came in third, they would be end up playing Indiana.
And a lot of people are speculating that even before the playoffs at the end of the season, last Friday night, Denver played Wembanyama's team, San Antonio, and Denver lost the game. They were up a lot, and they let Wembanyama made 17 points in 3 minutes against Denver. Now, come on. Wow. So if Denver had won the game, or if Denver lost the game, and now they avoided playing Dallas in their side of the playoffs, who they don't match up with very well. So everybody's speculating, did they lose that on purpose too? The system is bad. Why do they need to play in? I mean, they went from eight teams, which is a perfect setup, to 10, just to get a few more days, a few more dollars. I mean, come on.
It's all about money. They wanted more teams in it, but it's so darn confusing.
Bob, how long, you said you looked this up, how long has this plan been in? A couple of years?
Yeah, a couple of years.
3 years.
Maybe this is the third year.
So do you think they
like that? Yeah.
Is there any chance that the NBA created this? They saw that LeBron and Steph, their meal tickets, are coming to the end of their careers, and their teams aren't that good anymore. And if we, both of them in the old system, they would be out already. They wouldn't have made the playoffs.
Right. Correct.
Now that they're in, they're what, 7-8, whatever they are, they can still get in and play in. I'm just wondering about that,
They're 7-9 or whatever, 7-10. Yeah.
And they need them, both to win. I mean, you talk about, if the playoffs are without, and right away, you talk about the Lakers played the Pelicans, okay, last week, or the last game of the season. Yeah. And now guess who they're playing again? The Pelicans again to get into the thing. It's just ridiculous, I think.
Well, I wanted to run something by you, though, that happened last week of the regular season. Celtics are playing Milwaukee, and there are 2 free throws shot in the entire game.
Yeah.
None by Boston.
Yeah.
Referees, I mean, there's the suggestion that maybe the referees are going to let them play and not call as many fouls. You're shaking your head, Curry. What do you think?
Well, no, yeah. What was all of that all about? I had no idea. I mean, how can that happen? How can that possibly happen?
It shouldn't happen.
In an NBA game.
And then that should never happen. And they are going to, I bet you, Bob, correct. They're going to let them play. They're just going to let them play, hammer each other. And then they're going to get a foul out in front where the guy taps them going for the ball, and that's going to be a foul. But if they drive the basket and get hammered, if there's no blood, no foul.
That was about as bizarre as my boy Boban Marjanovic, who had the best. You see the best moment of the pre-playoffs.
He's the
Serbian. Was he Serbian center for the Rockets? He's been around forever. He's a crowd favorite. He's already become a legend in commercials. He does that commercial where he's auditioning as a broadcaster. And it's a State Farm, and he goes, she dribbles, and he says, "So step in here anytime if you will, save me." But he's a crowd favorite, so he's in LA. He used to be a Clipper, and Rock. I'm setting this up. The Rockets are playing Clippers. End of the game. Doesn't matter. So the Chick-fil-A has a deal. If an opposing player misses 2 free throws in a row, which a lot of colleges are doing this now, they have this at Chapel Hill. If the opposing team misses 2 free throws, they get a hamburger or something. So the crowds go crazy. And Boban is up there. Of course, he missed it deliberately the first time. And he's looking at the crowd, and he's pointing and he's mugging. And then he misses the second one. Here we go. He says, "Me? I'm going to handle this. You want some chicken?" And he misses the second one. And look at this. The place goes wild. And the radio call on this was classic. You got to get this. The guy is screaming. The Clippers are screaming. He gave them chicken. He's a man of the people. It was so great. I mean, that's it. We won't have a better NBA moment than that in the playoffs.
That's true.
Maybe Boban. A political had to come out of this, huh? He gave them chicken.
He gave them chicken.
Great stuff. We can almost wrap things up. Let's go quickly to the college basketball. Mark Pope becomes the new coach at Kentucky. We speculated as to any number of people who could get it. He was a player for Rick Pitino and leaves Brigham Young for Kentucky. Thoughts?
Well,
Rich, he was about their 10th choice, right?
Yeah, I think he was about their 5th choice, honestly.
Or 10th.
Do you think it was the 10th, really?
No, I don't know. I'm just,
but
you know.
It was about the fifth choice.
They
offered it for several people before him. But, you know, he played – well, he actually played at Washington, University of Washington for 2 years and then transferred to Kentucky his last two and played on a national championship team. But what's impressive with Kentucky is we all know their fans are crazy. They had 20,000 people in the arena for his to welcome him.
Well, and this is after 15,000 of them have been bitching and moaning online about they don't want Pope and why do we have to have him? We don't, you know, get him out of here. We don't even want him. And then 22,000 said, and he comes in on the bus with his championship team, who were all there, right? All his teammates were there. I thought luckily they didn't bring in Pitino, but apparently they came in on a bus and he was the last guy and he's holding the NCAA championship trophy over his head as he comes in. Oh yeah, okay. great thing.
But there were colleges that would have done that. I mean, would North Carolina Curry have done that? Seriously?
No way. Well, I'm stunned Kentucky did it. Whoever came up with that marketing idea should be given a huge salary raise because it was a great idea, don't you think?
Yes, sir. Yeah, for sure.
And then on top of it all, I just read yesterday, Pitino has signed for St. John's to come play Kentucky this year.
Oh, wow. That's great. That's awesome.
We're going to play in Lexington, right?
Oh yeah, I would think.
Yeah.
Kentucky's not going.
Well,
several
Calipari's recruiting class this year have decommitted to Kentucky. The guy with the great name Boogie Flan was the latest just yesterday. I'm stunned they haven't already gone. They aren't already signed at Arkansas with Calipari.
I think there's one guy. What's the international?
Bradshaw.
Player?
Bradshaw went to Ohio State.
He went to Ohio State?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, but he was on the team last year. He was on the team last year. I'm talking about the guys that have the high school guys that Calipari had committed to Kentucky. They're now decommitting like crazy. And I thought they'd already be ending up in Arkansas, but Boogie Flan, who knows where he's going to go? I mean, Carolina really wanted him to begin with also.
What's their hurry? They'll get there.
Yeah.
Fayetteville's not easy to find. You got to get
there. It's the portal. I mean, this is the era of the portal.
Final thoughts, anybody? Last people you want to throw under the bus?
I want to throw Phil Mickelson and Tiger under the bus for playing so poorly at the Masters.
Oh, I'm going over these old guys.
Tiger, but you know what? If you can't, you got to find a time when you say, you know what? My career is coming to an end. And if I can't play like I'm capable of playing, maybe it's time to step away.
I think 20,000 people will still show up to see you like
well,
Kentucky.
That's true. I mean, everybody will always show up to watch Tiger play forever. He could be 70 out there. They'll still come up and watch him play, but he's just, you know, his injuries and so forth. I don't know how he continues to do it, but God bless him.
Great.
Well, I don't know. I think as I watch the Masters, I don't know. I haven't seen what the ratings were, but, you know, golf ratings have been in the dumpster for the last year and a half. And this thing, you know, it's not like Shuffle Scheffler is, you know, winning majors is going to save it. I mean, maybe he'll be favored in all the in all the majors coming up. But I think he finished second at the Open. What, 2 years ago, he finished second at the PGA last year. You know, maybe Shuffles can save the save the tour, but I'm not sure. I think they have to, Bob, we've talked about this. Yeah. Don't they have to merge with the LIV? Don't they have to do that as fast as possible?
They probably do need to put that together at some point in time. And I don't see how, but Tiger did say he had positive talks with the Saudis when they all met in Bermuda 3 weeks ago. So maybe there'll be something. I don't know.
Well, both Rahm and Phil, LIV guys, said at the Masters that they have suggested that LIV goes to 72 holes rather than 54, which would be a huge step in getting them the international points that those guys need to make the majors. So maybe that's a step. I don't know. But you know, DeChambeau, who shot 66 first day, was a big story. Yeah. Rahm and Brooks Koepka, you know, they're those three guys are as big as draws as anybody on the PGA Tour, I think. I mean, who draws on? Is Shuffles going to be a draw? I don't know.
And they'll still be at the majors.
Yeah.
And the majors are really the only tournaments that draw a reasonable TV audience anyway. So,
but do you think Shuffles is going to be draw? Even his burnt orange, you know, yours did Texas shirts are like a pale burnt orange. He can't, it's like, oh, come on.
I threw the washer one too many times. Yeah. All right. I will close it all up with one final little note, not throwing under the bus. The best rivalry in sport, not Duke Carolina, not the Yankees and the Red Sox. How about USA Canada women's hockey?
Oh.
They played for the world championship. They played for the world championship this past week or two. Canada won the game 6-5 in overtime.
Wow.
All right. In the 14 World Cups that these two teams have played each other, they are now 18-18, and the goal differential is 1.
Wow.
That's good stuff. That's great stuff.
That's great stuff.
That's good stuff. They should play. And with women's sports coming the way they are, with Caitlin Clark getting picked number one, Saturday Night Live, she was brilliant.
Are those are amateur hockey players as women?
Those are amateur. Well, they might be pros, but it's Canadians and Americans.
Where Caitlin Clark did she just get drafted into that league? Is that where she's?
Yes.
Oh no,
yes,
she
yes.
played basketball. I'm sorry.
People would pay to put her put on skates. Enough. We want to thank Justin Jarrett, our fabulous producer, for bringing up a couple of great graphics during the show. And we will talk to you all next week when we're going to throw other people under the bus.
See you guys.
Thank you.